I'm not sure how many of you watched or remember the TV show The Magnificent Seven. It was only on for two seasons in the late 90s, but this is where I remember first seeing A. Martinez. He was in one episode in the second season, but he had a memorable part. I'm sure many more of you recognize him as Jacob Nighthorse from the hit show Longmire. I thought he was fantastic in that role, and we dive into several aspects of his character in the upcoming interview, as well as going back to talk a little bit about The Magnificent Seven. It was a guilty pleasure. I had to do it. I hope you like it. He was a great sport when I met him at the Western Writers of America convention, and if you're watching Queen of the South right now on USA, then you're seeing him in his current role. Here's Emmy Award-winning actor A. Martinez. First things first, A. Martinez, Mr. Jacob Nighthorse himself, thank you very much for coming to the show. Appreciate you doing the interview.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm really glad to be here.
So like I kind of said before we turned on the microphones, I wanted to go back in time a little bit and talk about something fun, because as I started this podcast several months ago, I pulled out some of the DVDs of Westerns that I loved and just started rewatching them to kind of have fun and get into the mindset and the world. And one of those was the Magnificent Seven TV show that I have on DVD. I'm probably one of, I don't like, there's probably six of us that have the DVDs. Boom. And I saw you in one of the episodes in season two, and I'd forgotten that you were in that. And I started, when I brought him out again and rewatched him for, I don't know how many years it's been, I saw all kinds of people that I'd forgotten were in that show.
Oh, yeah.
So I just wanted to throw it out there just for the fun of it. Were there any, what are some nuggets you might have remembered about that one episode in that series and getting that thing going? Because I liked it. It's a guilty pleasure.
I loved it.
So
many great actors in that show.
Oh, right? For sure.
Ron Perlman was in there. Michael Bean was
Yeah,
in
Michael
there.
Bean was the...
I think it was cast by, I want to say, what's that guy who's in Mr. Robot? Christian Slater. I think his mom cast it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you know, so she's like kind of a mystical figure to a lot of actors.
Okay.
You know, because, I mean, you know, she's a great casting director, and she has a son who's a huge actor. And whenever you get a chance to be involved with something that she does, you jump at it. And you know, I just loved it. And then, of course, the character's name was Martinez. It was Rafael Martinez.
Right.
So I was really stoked with it. And I remember they suggested that to kind of spice him up a little bit, it'd be cool if he had a soul patch, right?
Right.
So and it was like on the day. So I thought, well, I'm not going to be growing a soul patch today, so I guess we're going to put one on. And that was the first time I think I ever actually wore facial hair in a performance. And you know, that since then, it's sort of become like a go-to thing for me and a lot of people, actually. But
sure.
I loved it. There were such great actors, such great esprit de corps, and a guy that was a teacher on the big fencing scene, the sword scene,
right.
That was the climactic guy, was a guy that I'd done a play with years and years ago, Anthony DeLongis, and he was just getting started, just getting his bones in that game, and we worked together, and it was really nice to reconnect with him all the years down the road and see that his career had really bloomed.
So it's you guys were in a play together, and then he was like almost a fencing stunt coordinator type position on that show.
Right.
Very versatile guy, it sounds
very
like.
Very versatile guy. And he's become one of the go-to guys in LA for that kind of thing. So
perfect. Well, thank you for indulging that little random tidbit there that obviously has nothing to do with Longmire, but it just happened to see it. And after I watched that series, I kind of just rolled right back into watching the whole series of Longmire on Netflix. Thankfully, it was picked up after the little fiasco with A&E, and it's still alive on Netflix for all of us to keep enjoying. So that's fantastic.
Yeah.
So to dive into your character of Jacob Nighthorse a little bit, I think the chief thing I really liked about both his character and your performance in his character was the complexity of the character.
Mm, yeah.
I loved the fact that there was the kind of dark side and the light side, but the light side, you didn't play it as if it was almost a schizophrenic character. Like he had, even when he was doing things that were obviously good things, you still played it with this kind of this stoic, resolute sense of Jacob Nighthorse. So it didn't look like there were these two polar opposite figures inhabiting the same period. So first I wanted to compliment you on that, because I thought it was incredible.
Oh, I appreciate it.
And then how did you develop that? Did it start with some things that were on the page? Was the complexity of the character there right from the beginning? Or did you kind of learn it as it went along and you infused it with things that you found as you kept playing that character over and over?
Well, a couple things. The first thing is literally when I read the audition scene, I was so impressed with the rhythm of the writing. there's a sense of poetry in the way that the writers approached him. He's conscious of alliteration. You know, mm-hmm. he uses words poetically, and the rhythm sort of led you into thinking, okay, this is someone who likes the sound of his own voice.
Sure.
So it sort of starts to speak to a level of, I don't want to call him a narcissist necessarily, but he's certainly someone who has a high opinion of his presence in the world. You know,
right.
he feels very confident in that regard. So I love that about it. And you know, the way he came, he was really introduced in episode 2 in a scene that got cut. That was the audition scene.
Oh.
Where he played pool with Walt and the Red Pony and ran the table. And Walt said, what do you want? What do you really want at the end of it? And he said, Wyoming. So I thought, okay, well, this is beautiful. That scene got me the job. Loved it. But they ended up cutting it, and I could sort of tell that the scene was likely to go away because the episode was coming in long, and the scene was 3 minutes. It didn't refer to the plot. I'm thinking, this is a scene that could die, and sure enough, it died. So my introduction became the fifth episode, the Dog Soldier episode, where we actually see Jacob intervening on behalf of these children who are being sucked into the foster care system at a rate that reflects the fact that more money is made for these kids at risk and on the reservations
sure.
than Anglo kids. So you kind of go, oh, well, he's got a hair up his ass about this. I mean, this matters to him. And it ended, that episode ended so brilliantly with a combination of Walt confronting the villainess and saying, yeah, it's true that I can't prove in court. Your word is going to stand up better than these Indians. But when the Dog Soldier comes for you, I'll be a 20-minute car ride away, and I'll get here as soon as I can. And he slowed down. Rob Taylor started slowing down, and he was referring to his own kind of walkabout moments. And you saw this arrogant, nasty woman give in to her fear. It was just so brilliant. And then they're playing that song, Sail, with the
right,
massive
right.
rhythmic smashing yeah. drum. And then they go up in the sky and come back down to Jacob smashing the stake in the ground and observing the protocols of the Dog Soldiers, the ritualized honoring of these Cheyenne warriors who staked themselves to the ground in the rear guard mm-hmm. at the end of a battle to like give the clan a chance to get away while they fought to the death, literally stick to the ground.
Right.
So, okay, what's that about is the question. And instantly you start thinking about what those people meant in the history of the grand drama of genocide against the indigenous. And history, in my estimation, has been profoundly kind to the Dog Soldiers. These guys said to the elders in their own, among their own people, these treaties are useless. These treaties are worth nothing. They will never be observed. And the elders persisted in pursuing the treaties. The animosity between those two factions got so bad that the Dog Soldiers, the Dog Soldier clan, was cut out of the tribe and sent away, was literally banished. As a result of which, when the cholera came, they survived
right.
because they weren't around. But history has been very kind to them. Their observations were particularly true. So,
right.
so I thought, okay, so Jacob, he's observing that, you know, in the present tense. So what does that say about him? It says that he's a soldier fighting a war that was joined before he existed. So to me, a person who's willing to observe, to honor men like that is immediately, in my value system, worthy of respect. So I found a tremendous amount of respect for him, all his rudeness aside,
right.
you know, his arrogance, his sense of his own strength, all of that stuff. I mean, I just think that, you know, he's a soldier, and I just respected him profoundly from the get-go.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So can you also take the listeners behind the scenes a little bit as far as
playing a character like that over several seasons, and how do you see the character evolve? How what's it like to be that person and then watch yourself as your character change and grow over seasons? And then how do you as an actor deal with that? What's the process of working through that character after 6 years, I believe, or six seasons of it?
Yeah.
How does that work? For those of us who've never, I have terrible stage fright. I'm never going to be an actor. How does that work? I put myself on camera a little bit, but trust me, it's not my default position.
Yeah.
So how does that work?
There was a tremendous sense of nourishment going in both directions. The first thing that happened was that the show was a hit. Boom.
Right.
Out of the box, right? And in my career, usually what you're talking about with a new series is there's a certain number you need to hit to have gained traction. And in my history, usually the things I'm involved with have a sort of like landed a little below that number, and then the struggle is joined, will we survive?
Right.
And I think due to the fact that Katie Sackhoff and Lou Diamond Phillips had such robust followings, and the fact that social media had already like gotten a toehold, you know, they brought people with them, and suddenly the number that we needed to hit was doubled, basically. And you go, oh, this is actually, people like this, right? So that was the first thing. Wow, this has landed. That was like a incredibly giddy, energizing idea. And then, because of that episode, The Dog Soldier, Greer Shepherd, who was running the show, called me at home actually and said, okay, just so you know, it was likely your character wasn't going to go too much beyond the first season, if at all, because we, you know, thought he was going to be holding the dark bag and be disposable and needing to be punished. But something happened in this Dog Soldier episode, and we're seriously considering having him not go away. And I leapt off the phone. I jumped off the phone as quick as I could because I didn't want her to know how desperately important that was to me. I wanted to keep a little of my, you know, dignity in my professional
life. Yeah, you got to play it cool in these situations.
Yeah, well, you know, whatever you think. But I mean, that. So, okay, that could happen. And then the show found its legs. The show got better. And the audience starts to talk.
Mm-hmm.
And you actually start to understand that your presence in the industry, in my case, is undergoing a change that's important. And people started saying repeatedly nice things to me, and my confidence grew. I saw that across the board with everyone in the cast.
Wow.
Everyone, and I saw it among the writers. Everyone's confidence grew, as you would expect, when people approve and are very vocal about it.
Yeah, they definitely were not shy.
So all in, and so suddenly, you know, you think, well, wow, okay, I guess I am doing okay. And you do, and it makes you a little bit braver, and it starts to cascade.
Sure.
And everyone basically, I was feeling so much the strength of feeding off of the approval we were getting. And of course, The company was vetted. It's Greer. I've been hearing about Greer Shepherd assembling groups of people to do shows that are so sorted out emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And you think that's an odd thing to hear about someone in LA years before I ever got a job with her.
Uh-huh.
And sure enough, you look at the Longmire group down to the people serving, you know, food on the set.
Right.
People were sorted out. Robert Taylor is as non-diva a star of a show as you could dream of. Right?
You certainly get that feeling when you watch.
You get the feeling. So there's just this group of people that are totally devoted to each other's backs, and there's no sense of anybody trying to like spoil it or like pull my light out of your light.
Sure.
You know? It was a perfect storm of good aspects that allowed everyone to flourish on a level that, you know, I think for most of us, it was the best work of our careers.
Let's say, so that atmosphere clearly allowed you to take more chances or go or find, you know, continue with that character and push it a little further as you obviously then became the primary rival for
Walt right. Longmire. You two guys butted heads in just about every scene was in there. So just to ask it plainly, what was the best part about playing Jacob? And maybe as a kind of a part B, how fun were those rivalry scenes when you would get to go up against Walt, and particularly when you were right? He certainly falsely accuses you several times. Yeah. So you got to come out on the winning end of that and kind of shove it back in his face a little bit.
Yeah, I want to give Lou Diamond Phillips some props on so many levels. He helped me. I showed up in town in that first scene where I had to run the table on Walt, you know. I'm thinking, boy, I need to brush up on my billiards, you know. And he goes, hey, man, I know the pool hall. Come with me. And he took me into town to this place, and we played pool all night. And he fended off the adoring fans and stuff. And, you know, helped me kind of, you know, get my thing. He said, this is the cool gym to go to. Uh-huh. This is the restaurant you need to hit. You know, he showed me the ropes. He'd only been there like, I guess he'd just been there for the pilot. But basically, he, like, got me set up. And then Craig asked him to read the introduction to one of his books about probably 3 or 4 years ago in town. And Craig was on a tour for his book, and mm-hmm. Lou had agreed to read the introduction of the book. And I was doing a scene with Lou in Jacob's house that day. And he said, why don't you come to the book signing? And, you know, we'll sign books afterwards and meet the fans and stuff. And mm-hmm. I said, okay, well, will that be cool? He goes, yeah, you should do it for sure. So I have to work a scene after Lou does. So by the time I get off work, I drive into town, and he's on the stage, you know, holding forth with great elegance. Right. And he works me into the narrative within 10 seconds of me hitting the room. He's like said, and the actor who plays Jacob Ninehorse just walked in the back of the room, and he goes back. And people all turn and look, and oh, they're so happy to see me. Great afternoon, meeting the fans, signing the books, just feeling like sort of part of the inner circle. And then he says to Craig, so we should take Gay out to dinner tonight, right? So yeah, let's. So Craig takes me out to this really cool restaurant. And suddenly I'm thinking, oh, I hear that Rob just got called, and Cassidy and Adam. And so they may be coming too, because it's right now it's just Lou and me and Craig and Judy. And so all of a sudden, Rob shows up, and I had imagined Rob is probably going to sit at the head of this table, so I'm going to sit next to that seat, so if I get a chance now, I can actually talk to Rob.
Right.
On the set, there's so rarely time.
Sure.
So he comes in, orders a beer, I order the same beer as him. When he gets another one, I get another one. I'm trying to keep up. and we got to sit there for 2 hours and talk about what we're going through and our history as actors, and literally break onto a new level of friendship between us. And suddenly on camera, between Jacob and Walt, there's the possibility of them, just a little bit of a smile going on.
Sure.
It's like, I know you know I know, but I know you know I know. It's just this wonderful thing that opened up between us, because just having the time to actually let our hair down together off screen, which Lou Diamond Phillips facilitated.
Fantastic.
You know, and then since then we've become really, really good friends. And as
Great.
The friendship has grown, the work grew. But I'll just say at the beginning, in the Dog Soldier episode 5, I'm in his office, Jacobson Walt's office, haranguing him. If these were white kids, you'd be moving heaven and earth.
Mm-hmm.
But these Indians, you know, the your government is like punishing us, profiting off of our misery. At the beginning, and Jacob is typically rude, and Walt is like, you know, keeping it at arm's length. And then suddenly there's a moment where Walt decides to actually entertain the possibility that Ninehorse is telling the truth.
Right.
And something literally changed in his eyes. I mean, I'm 18 inches from the guy's mm-hmm. face. And I saw like a different like texture come into his eyes, literally, you know, like a different level of moisture in his eyes. And I'm thinking, oh, that's how good this guy is. That's how good he is.
It's interesting how an off-screen friendship can help color the scenes, even when you're primarily rivals.
Yes.
I think that's a really interesting concept.
It was wonderful, and I think we both came to agree that at some point in time they would have to recognize, mm-hmm. even though they never said it, they would have to recognize the similarities in their basic
right.
approach to things.
Yeah, in their core, they really have more in common than they have differences.
Absolutely.
Basically, they obviously go about things in a different way, but there is a core there that's very similar to those
yeah.
two guys.
And you know, and I took such pleasure in having the fans, you know, go from going saying, oh, what a, you know, I hate your character. What a great bad guy you are and stuff. And I thought, well, yeah. And I would direct a lot of people, you know, spend 10 minutes, go to Wikipedia, punch in dog soldiers.
Right.
Just spend 10 minutes. And, you know, you can sort of see people go, oh, okay, well, yeah, okay. You know? and the thing was that when they would start to say, yeah, but he just cheats, he lies, he does, he breaks through, I say, okay, let's look at Walt like breaking into his girlfriend's office, who's a doctor, and stealing the medical records out of her filing cabinet and faking his own like unconsciousness. So that, you know, I mean, how many doors did he knock down without having a warrant and stuff? I mean, don't tell me that they aren't both doing whatever they can to get to what they perceive to be the worthy goal.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I was going with the complexity of it earlier, that Jacob might not necessarily take what people might consider to be the right path or the good path, for lack of a better description, but his intentions are generally good. I sincerely believe that he sincerely wants to help his people.
Yes.
So he might go about it in ways that people don't necessarily like, but if you look close enough, you can see the underlying credibility within Jacob and the good intentions in there.
Yes.
I thought that was the good part of the complexity, that you could show both sides of that in the same person without making one side super obvious. You're not like signaling big flashing lights on it when you're doing something good. I think it's great that you can put both those together.
And to give them credit, because at the end of the day, it's about the writing. And I literally started to become, it was very clear to me, okay, this episode we've inflected him in a way that makes you think, okay, he's actually someone of good heart. His motives are pure. And literally, the very next time we'd see him, the inflection would be reverted, and you'd see them go, oh, look at what an asshole he's being, you know. Mm-hmm. He's like, you know, look, how could he talk?
Right.
And, you know, and look at this thing behind the scenes. This looks like he's the guy pulling this string.
Yeah.
He's probably what I originally thought he was. And then the next week, they would inflect it back into, yeah, but look, he seems like he really...
there's definitely a possibility where he doesn't know what's going on back there.
That, he could be innocent.
Yeah, exactly.
They were brilliant. It just, I mean, they literally, it was like an oscillation.
Yeah, that's great. That keeps fans enticed and keeps them watching for sure. So we'll wrap up with two more quick ones. So you've kind of touched on this as we've been talking, but how have you seen, or what was it like from the inside to watch the popularity of the show grow, even though it started at a very high point? To watch it grow and to see how it resonated with fans. What's that like for an actor who's in it and living and breathing it every day on the set, putting those hours into production, then to see the reaction?
Well, it's wonderful. And I mean, there really is a sense of community around the show that's got teeth. I mean, it's got texture. I have friends now in my life because of the show that I otherwise would never have met.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them I met online, but because Longmire Days allows people to gather in the flesh, I mean, literally friends, you know, friends that matter to me. So that's been incredible. And of course, the people can rightfully take credit for having saved the show.
Right.
You know, it's one of those magical stories where the audience was so ardent that their wishes generated like a profound kind of sense of mission on behalf of the producers to go pitch it. And Netflix was aware because Netflix was showing the reruns from A&E.
Right.
So Netflix knew what was going on and, you know, stepped up.
Yeah.
And then that opened it up to become much more like a cinematic and, you know, and then they wanted to take it out to the reserve. So that was a magical part of it. And I think, you know, it's just one of the elements like this in our culture, but I went out to Standing Rock.
Mm-hmm.
And the show means so much to so many Indigenous people. It's not just the only thing that does in modern entertainment, but it has an honored place among Indigenous people because of the way that you have like these, there's not just there's the Indian, there's like four or five characters who are distinctly operating in lives that seem grounded in reality, and they each have distinct goals and are going about their jobs in different ways, and reflecting on the humanity of like a multitude of Indigenous characters. Those are just the ones that appear regularly, and then have all these guest actors coming in and telling stories. So I mean, it meant so much to so many people that have been so long underrepresented in the storytelling in the country. And that, there's not much in my life that has meant more to me than that.
That sounds like an incredible experience.
Yeah,
for sure. Craig mentioned very briefly that when he's gone up to the reservation, the Northern Cheyenne Reservation, there are now people who claim they are the basis for characters in the books. It's so popular that there are obviously friends of his up there who he's worked in little character traits into characters in the books. But now it's populated the rest of the population up there, where there are some people who say, oh yeah, I'm the basis for that character. And they're really not, but
yeah,
it's now...
But you can trade on
fun,
that.
Yeah, it's a fun thing. It's great. So I think that's a great level of popularity there. So the last thing I want to wrap up with is, what do you have coming up next? Where can the fans, the legions of fans who are out there of Longmire, find you in your next project?
I'm doing an arc on Queen of the South. In fact, the season 3 debuted last night, the 21st of June. And I'm in episode 4, and then I'm in a couple more before the season's over. And it's a really different experience. I'm playing, I don't want to give too much away, but I'm playing, I mean, if we want to like find a bad guy,
okay,
this is a bad guy. And he's such a bad guy that I only could agree to play him if I could be assured that he would get his just desserts.
Okay.
And he does. But that's a wonderful show. Alice Braga, the great actor who's the lead of that, is an extraordinary talent, and that's a real special show. Queen of the South. It's on USA.
I was going to say, yeah, to USA. Okay,
yeah, USA.
Perfect.
Yeah, and the first two seasons are streaming on all the usual platforms.
Right, yeah, that's one of the great inventions of television nowadays, that if you happen to miss it on TV and you don't have a DVR or something like that, pretty soon they're going to land on one of those streaming platforms.
It's truly.
You can eat it up.
I mean,
real
it's
quick.
It's so magical. I mean, I'm Zahn McLarnon, who plays Matthias in Longmire, and was Hansi Dent in Fargo,
yes,
and
incredible.
On the Sun, incredible.
Yeah.
And he's been in season 2 of Westworld.
Right.
And
right.
And I'm 2 episodes away from encountering his episode 8, which has been reviewed by the New York Times as like possibly, well, certainly the best episode of that show ever.
Really?
When you think about that,
yeah,
where they actually took that actor and that character and all the implications of that and decided to spend the entire episode focusing on him. And he delivered, by all accounts, gloriously. So
I'm not up to it yet either,
yeah,
but I have seen this kind of the same headlines. I started seeing things on social media and I thought, oh God, I got to stay away.
I know.
But there's something there.
Right.
I wouldn't allow myself to get too deep into it, but I saw a little enticements right there. Something is coming that I definitely need to pay attention to.
Right. When you start hearing, you start reading like literally dozens of people consecutively,
yeah,
saying how broke them down into tears, I'm thinking, yeah, okay, that's
okay.
Going to be something to watch.
I'm going to have to lock myself away for that one too.
Like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Apparently it's going to need to hurt.
Yeah, yeah. And again, you know, Zahn, you know, a tremendous talent, a tremendous man, a tremendous man who basically started finding something on another level in himself, doing Longmire, I think.
Right.
Just like I did.
Well, you guys did really turn out to have kind of an all-star cast there and crew. The show has obviously, like I said before, resonated with fans and will continue to do so. It's clearly the impact of it and the legacy is not going away anytime soon. So we all thank you very much for the show and for the impact and the fun that we've had watching it. And I thank you for being on this show.
Yeah, my pleasure. Really nice talking to you, brother.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening. Now, as always, if you like the show, please give it a rating and a review on iTunes. Those things help make the show more visible to new listeners as they're browsing through all the different podcasts out there. You can find us on the web at oldwestpodcast.com and on our Facebook page, Legends of the Old West Podcast. The handles for Twitter and Instagram are @OldWestPodcast.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.